You want to do the pictures? Yeah. So pull the chair up here because you'll probably.
If I see the what I need to draw, then I can.
Well, you have to.
Not an artist, but.
You have to see it up here. Previously, Krishna has described in the 14th chapter how the living entity is entangled in the three modes of material nature, and how the living entity can become free or liberated from those modes of material nature through bhakti yoga. In this chapter, Krishna gives a very nice analogy of how we can perceive that whole picture of the material existence in such a way that we can understand our position and get disentangled from that position. So here in this 15th chapter, a very nice chapter, the yoga of the Supreme Person. In the first four or five verses, Krishna actually describes this banyan tree or aswatha tree, and then after that he describes Purushottam yoga. Sometimes this chapter is also called Purushottam yoga, the yoga of surrendering to Purushottam, the Supreme Person. Someone can read the first verse. Nice loud, clear voice.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "It is said that there is an imperishable branching tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Veda."
Yes. Okay. So now we have to get our artist, yes. We have to. what we'll do, alright, before you start, we'll read each of the verses that describes this tree. So read the next, read verse 2, and then read verse 3 and 4, and then we'll draw the tree from there. So if you can read those verses too.
"The branches of this tree extend downwards and upwards, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. This tree also has roots going down, and these are bound to be fruitive actions of human society."
And the next one.
"The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of passion. Thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns, and there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began, and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial."
Okay. Alright, so keep your pen. Alright. So where do you begin?
We can
Twigs and leaves. So that's a good start. There's a few things we might have to add to that. It looks more like an oak tree. Would anyone like to make any alterations at all? Which way is that? Let's start from the top. What's missing from that picture? So I think he's got the twigs there.
The earth and the sky, the orientation, the reflection, if that's the water, the tree reflected.
That's right. Would you like to come and add something to that?
Maybe you're much better than me.
I
was thinking that if I understood that this tree is the reflection, this is the material for so probably all of this is now inside the material world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why all of this, the roots and the branches, the material, all of this is basically material, even the branches, even the roots. It's just
so
that it's just that
this reality
that we look when we look at it, we look at it like this way, and it's the wrong way. I mean, the tree is as the tree, up the roots are down, but it's this.
How would you change that? There's just some sky, a few clouds.
No, I wouldn't say that. I think that
up there is the spiritual world, right?
Yes.
Down from there is the material world.
Yes.
And up from there is the spiritual world.
I think that the whole picture is rotated, basically. It's not only about the tree. I think that the whole of this picture is just the wrong perception of it. What is this
picture?
A reflection.
Yeah, reflection. But the whole picture, like that. I would say like that. So all of this is basically, even the roots are maybe above.
So how would you change that picture?
I would say that this, the solution would be to understand that this here is the boundary between material and spiritual. Mm-hmm. So in the spiritual world, all of this picture would be like that. And then the branch, the root, and then it would be the all of this.
So there's not just clouds up there, but there's actually the real tree.
Yeah.
Right? Because we can't have a replacement of the tree unless there's a real tree and it reflects. Alright?
But isn't Krishna the root of all material and spiritual manifestations?
Yes. The root of the reflection is the real tree.
Yeah. But Krishna is the root of the tree. He might not be situated. I mean, obviously, everything in this room.
So, you think we should draw a little picture of Krishna in the mouth to this?
Yeah. But everywhere, because everything actually is the tree, Krishna.
Yeah, he is the root of all creation, in that he is the reality from which the material reflection exists, can't exist. So just like our shadow, you know, the root of the shadow or the cause of the shadow, you know, must be the, you know, the form that is reflecting the real thing, or a mirage. You know, if you have a mirage, you see, you might, on a sunny day, you look up the road and you see sort of appears to be water on the road, but there's no water on the road, but there has to be water somewhere for it to be reflecting. So the root of that mirage of the water is the real water. And we also say that Krishna is the root of all existence, and that he is the seed. He impregnates the living entities into the material world. He manifests the material energy, so he is the root of the material energy by manifesting material energy. He is the root of the spiritual existence by manifesting the spiritual energy. So he is the, because he's the, everything manifests or expands, just like, you know, the root of the tree, everything expands, the tree expands from that. So everything expands from Krishna and Krishna's energies. So in that way, he's the root. You've got Mula. Mula means the root. In astrology, one of the 27 stars that circles the zodiac is called Mula. And people whose birth star, their moon star, is Mula, they generally have that tendency to always find the source of everything. Mm-hmm. And they're very good at arguing and debating, and they have that ability to investigate the original source. They make good investigators and what have you. yes. So, let's have a look. Alright, let's start from now. Prabhupada mentions that this banyan tree in the material world is reflected on the water of material desire. So
this here, this line here, represents our material desire, and that is the beginning points of our entrance into the material existence, material desire. Which is interesting because one of the it is described there that the way to cut down this material tree is by detachment, which is the opposite of material desire. So detachment and surrender in Krishna. So, by material desire, we enter that domain, and by detachment, surrender in Krishna, we enter that domain. Now, if we look at the roots, how does it describe those roots? We've got a description of the roots that these roots, it's also described in there that they actually begin from here. We can call this the total material substance. So, Krishna is the root of the total material substance, but in another sense, Krishna is on that side. And this material energy is reflected on this side. So these roots, in one sense, they stem from the total material substance. Some of these roots, and this of course is Brahma Loka. So right up the top there, that's Brahma's abode, that's the topmost planetary system in the material universe. Some of the roots go down. Here. And going to the. So here, describes. What is it that nourishes the roots? Three modes and two modes.
So therefore,
in this passing in ignorance, so this is sattva. The roots up here, in essence, are nourished by sattva. And the roots here are nourished by rajas. And the roots here are nourished by tama. Okay. So the roots actually can extend right down. Okay. Now the branches. What does it say about the branches there? We have.
Downwards and upwards.
So these downward roots are rajas and tamas. So the upward roots are sattva, and the downward roots are rajas and tamas.
And the leaves are the very things.
Yes.
We'll get to that. We better put the branches in. Okay. Yeah.
The branches are the different planets. So,
we may have some branches like this.
Some of the branches would, in one sense, way up there in Brahmaloka. Some of the branches from down to middle planetary systems. Some of the branches would come down to the lower planetary systems. And of course, in one sense, those branches would also represent the bodies that we would have if we resided on those planetary systems. Right? So if we were nourished by the mode of Satyagun, we would have a body in the mode of Satyagun living on one of these branches in our planetary systems. Then there is secondary. Describe that there are secondary roots, and so sometimes you see that in a tree. They can have roots extend down from the branches. But those secondary roots are associated with fruitive activities in human society. So, what that means is that if people live in the upper planetary systems and they enjoy life in the heavenly planets, it leaves a certain impression of attachment and aversion. And when their time is finished in those upper planetary systems, they again take birth in the human area, and according to the attachment and aversion that they've developed in other planetary systems, that becomes the that sort of roots them or to fruitive activities. So again, that can also be like this. Some of the roots may actually extend from the lower planetary systems that they've been enjoying or suffering, but it leaves an impression within the heart, which is like creates a root for further fruit of activities. So when they take birth in the sphere of the human planetary systems, they have a particular desire or proclivity which is actually left over from here, and that manifests as further fruit of activities. So in other words, when they finish in the upper planetary systems or the lower planetary systems, that it's not that you go to the heavenly planets and then when you go to the human planetary system that everything is in the past. There's actually a residual effect in the heart which produces another cycle of desires, fruitive activities, which will then take one up or down to the next. So then those roots would then extend from there up to here
and they enter here. That is, so the roots are literally up, down. That is. So they're secondary, they're not beginning from here, but they're sort of coming. Any questions on that? So that, according to these roots, they produce a certain attachment and aversion, which produces a certain type of pious activities on the material planetary systems, which produces a certain type of karma, which then sends one up and down that tree. Okay, so we've got some of the branches. Some of the branches, of course, go up and some of them go down. So, again. In one sense, these are the upper branches, like that. So,
they're the roots.
What's that?
And they're the roots at the top?
They're the roots at the top there. These are branches.
Oh.
these are branches, and that. And here. They're secondary roots. These are branches up in Brahma Loka, these are branches in the middle planetary system, these are branches in the lower planetary systems. it describes that some of the branches go up and some go down. And then you have secondary roots as well. So, in other words,
this part tends to be clear. I have another conception of it, so it's now making me confused.
Do you want to draw that? Where was that stated? Some of the branches go up. That's verse number 2. Let's have a look. Branches up in the higher planetary systems, middle planetary systems, and then some going down to the lower planetary systems.
You mentioned that they can also.
That, yeah.
constantly going up and down between the different branches.
A vision of just one tongue, but it's not, you know, in the sea you usually have many branches coming, say from the,
you
have down the roots and then the,
like the bench.
Only the oak tree, you know, just one coming out.
In a big banyan tree, you wouldn't be able to distinguish the trunk is. There's some banyan trees. Some branches go up. Some branches go up. Some go down.
Yeah.
So there may be some branches coming up here, and some go down. In other words, there is some movement up and down, even in the different levels. So you see, it's very difficult to, as it describes it, the real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. So, and then we have the twigs and the leaves, so you can put them in there. Maybe you use green or something like that. There's green. Green for the leaves.
For the leaves. So
we have we have tips of branches like this. They're the tips. And then you have twigs. So what are the tips of the branches and what are the twigs?
The tips of the senses, ears, nose, eyes.
Yep.
Yeah. keep in mind that the branches in one sense represent the bodies that we develop on those different planets, and the twigs of the tips of the branches, the senses, and then the twigs for the sense objects. And then the leaves for the baby kings, particularly recommending fruit of activity. So now the leaves, of course, they in one sense nourish the tree. They're a very attractive part of the tree, beautiful green foliage, and the leaves, of course, they're like the kitchen, they nourish the tree in another sense. So people being attracted to performing different Vedic rituals, then they're literally that keeps them attracted to this tree, and that nourishes the movement up and down. So the living entities are described as, you know, going up and down almost like monkeys, you know, from one branch to another, and inside this tree, it's possible for them to actually lose the sense of what is up and what is down. So sometimes it is so vast and so intricate, going up and down, that sometimes someone may be on this branch and heading this way, and they may think they're going up, because it's simply because the tree is upside down. For a lot of people in ignorance, they think this is upwards, and they're actually going further and further down into the lower modes of nature. Others, in goodness, who actually know things as they are, they realise that actually upwards is this way, towards Brahma Loka. But generally, apart from those situated in Brahma Loka, or those becoming eligible to go to upper planetary existence by being in the Brahma goodness, most other living entities would actually consider this direction to be upwards. Now this tree, of course, because we have the tree, the real tree reflected here, so that line there, that's 180 degrees. Now, the impersonalists, they say that the root of the tree of material existence is Brahman. So what does that prove?
The root of the tree is Brahman.
But all that is considered by.
What's that?
But all that is considered by.
If the mind, just like the impersonalists say, the Brahman is the root of this material manifestation, right? And this picture here, that is 180 degrees. So what does that prove?
just beyond this material world.
What's that?
Just above that material world.
Now, if you say that this is 108, if the statement says this is 108 degrees, and that this is now the tree, and they throw the Brahmanita, if it is only 180, that means still there is
another
180.
That's right.
That must be fitted together to set all 360.
Yes, and the varieties that are reflected here mean there must be a variety in the spiritual world which is being reflected. So up here we have the reality with its unlimited variety, and that is 180 degrees in the top portion, 180 degrees in the bottom portion. You get the whole picture, 360 degrees, and therefore the problem with the impersonalists is that they only look at the 180 degrees. They're not looking at the 360 degrees. If the material world is resting on Brahman and it is a reflection of Brahman, therefore the Brahman must have the reality of the varieties that are illusory reflections here. So in essence it's a very nice description that Krishna is giving, because it also anyone looking at that would, you know, understand, oh, there must be the reality in the other part. If this is a reflection, then there must be the real tree of spiritual existence.
That tree.
What's that?
Then by a tree.
But if you walk in the botanical garden, in the park over there in Sixth Park, I saw a tree that's very similar to this one. The tree that's coming out of the ground.
Yeah.
There's many benches straight from the ground going, and long one that's very, very close to the ground. Long way, maybe 10 meters.
The form of this one is nothing to say.
Usually, we have a picture of the oak tree.
That
tree was very unusual.
They drew on that
tree.
They
were tiny.
So why is it, why is it called illusionary? Because in one way, it is actually there, but it's illusionary in saying that we think it's permanent. But otherwise, it's really there.
The reflection is really there, but we have to understand it's a reflection.
What do we understand by the term reflection?
Reflection means it is not the real thing, but the picture of the real thing is being reflected on something.
So do we understand that all the species that we see here, I don't know how many species we see here, all of them are there in a spiritual world, but there it's in absolute terms, because they can they are having different qualities, that they may not be confined to that one form, they can change into each other form, and that forever. Is that what we understand? Like even all the insects and everything that we see in the material world, everything is there.
It's a perverted reflection, a distorted reflection, just like generally, on a body of water, there are maybe some little ripples, and so you don't get, you can get a fairly clear picture, but not, there are some slight distortions, because it's not the real tree, it is a reflection, there are some slight distortions, but it is close enough. So therefore, we don't expect that the exact mirror image in the spiritual world is exactly what we see here in the material world, but the essential truths are there.
in that primarily the just like they say that man is created in the image of God, so we have two arms and two legs and one head and two eyes, so God has a similar feature in his original form as Krishna. He looks just like that, two arms, two legs. At the same time, there are unlimited varieties of living entities with different forms, peacocks and and insects, and you certainly don't have poisonous creatures wandering around the spiritual world biting people and things like that. But there is unlimited variety. There's much more variety of living entities than what we have here. And
the Shesha, isn't he considered basically a naga?
Yeah, he is a snake-like form.
Snake,
yeah.
And it's we call it as naga, which is very poisonous.
Ananta says he won't bite you. If you ever get to meet him, he won't bite you.
No, he could not bite, but he is poisonous. And then how do we say, because when he says Ananta Shesha, we say that he's basically that. So, now I'm just trying to understand,
true.
Because when you keep using these terms,
yep.
It's a reflection, it's a signal.
Whatever poison that an Ananta-sesha has in the spiritual world is nectar. For us it is poison in the material world. In the spiritual world that poison is nectar. That's the difference.
So we may have bees also there, but their sting is
their sting is nectar.
Nectar.
So for instance, everything in the spiritual world is a source of bliss. So, if just like in this world we have fight, so people fight, but it's not the cause of bliss, it causes a lot of sadness. In the spiritual world they also fight, but they play. It's just, they play and they wrestle. And they don't hurt each other, and it's all done in love. And even though Krishna is God, he's happy to let others beat him, and he takes a lot of pleasure in being beaten by his friends, and they take a lot of pleasure in beating him. So everyone is happy, everyone is blissful, but there is fighting, it is playful, loving, not like the fighting here. They say things which are say relationship, there are five principal relationships in this little world. We can have neutral, we can have servitor relationship, we can have friendship, we can have parental, and we can have conjugal. If you look throughout the whole material world, there's only those five principal relationships, and there are seven indirect relationships which are sort of come and go. The five relationships are primary, so you might have a mother-son relationship, which is primary relationship, and then within that there can be indirect relationships. Sometimes there can be shock, or what have you done, or laughter, like that. But so in the spiritual world, those relationships are also there, but they're all blissful. Again, here in the material world, we have separation in a relationship, which is part of the variety, but when there's separation in a relationship here in the material world, you know, we become disturbed. But in the spiritual world, the separation is there, but that separation increases the you know, transcendental bliss. It brings transcendental bliss to a climactic point.
Prabhu, but when the gopis are lamenting in separation, and Yashoda Mataji is lamenting, that, I mean, they are not of the material world, they are totally spiritual, basically. So, they are not enjoying it, they are going through the pain.
No, they are enjoying it. They are enjoying that. If we may think that Mother Yashoda is experiencing some difficulty in anxiety about Krishna, that's because we're relating her situation to how we experience a similar thing in the material world, where we do get in anxiety and suffer some stress and what have you. So it appears like that, but actually the anxiety in the spiritual world is a source of increased transcendental bliss. They don't have mature bodies there, which suffer pain. They don't have material bodies which suffer illnesses, old age, death. They don't have material minds which
suffer.
And then
one body can turn transform into the other. So they say that mango tree can give all fruits. They flower all the throughout the all any part, any time of the year, and continuously they be flowering, they give you fruits. Is that true, Prabhu?
Yeah,
one tree can give any fruit.
All the living entities there have the same nature as Krishna, which is described in the 14th chapter, that one has the same nature as Krishna. That means that all the senses are interchangeable. So Krishna has that, but all the living entities in the spiritual world also have that, which means that they can see through every part of their body.
And the tree,
although they have eyes,
still
they can see, they can hear through every part of their body. They can perform the functions of both any different part of their body.
A tree can become a human being, and a human being form, a human being form can take the form of a tree. Anything to please Krishna there, is that how it is?
Their forms are eternal.
The tree will always be a tree.
Tree will always be a tree,
yeah. Yes. I wanted to ask you, if we had in material world, we have the impression that the branches, some of the branches are going to the higher plant branches in the middle or in Tama. So in the spiritual world, this is basically the reflection. So does that mean that those who are closer to the roots in the spiritual world are closer to Krishna in their relationship, and then you have different levels, same like in the material world, you have different levels, the sattva, raja, and tama. Does that mean in this spiritual world you have the real, some kind of hierarchy maybe, in this relationship?
One of the main things we have to keep in mind about this is that this is an illusory creation. And this is the real creation. Because this is an illusory creation, the way that this material world functions according to the modes of material nature, that doesn't exist in the spiritual world. The three modes of material nature do not exist. That is part of the illusion. We take this as our reality, the three modes of material nature, but actually the three modes of material nature are an illusory creation. They don't exist in the reality. so therefore what we have to be careful of doing, although it's a reflection, we shouldn't take the illusory part of material existence and then say that that also exists in the spiritual world. So therefore we have to understand which parts of this illusory reflection in fact are reflecting the reality and which parts are the illusory part, because it is just a reflection. If you see if you see a mirage and you look at a mirage, it that picture of water doesn't have all the characteristics of the real body of water. There are some characteristics within that mirage which are not there in the real body of water. So
can I answer this question?
Mm-hmm.
I think I understand it. There are some jivas who are in conjugal relationship to Krishna, so they'll be very close. Some are, maternal love. I think that's what it's called. So then there's some on the servitude, and so they will be little far off. I mean, in there, everything is absolute. Conjugal is supposed to be the highest. Conjugal is supposed to be the highest. There is a gradation there. It's not, I mean, for us to talk, because that's all. But conjugal is supposed to be the highest. Everything else, there's a gradation. This is like lower gradations. There are gradations there. But it's, everything is
not. But not the material sense. Yeah.
Not the
because in the spiritual world, whether one has a conjugal relationship or whether one has a relationship as a friend or a servant, because each of those personalities in their various relationships are all adding to Krishna's conjugal pleasure, and they're all equally important, so there's no higher or lower. In other words, when Krishna goes for a walk in the forest, Krishna must have rather only to enjoy his loving pastimes, those trees that become that beautiful romantic setting are just as important as Krishna walking near Radharani. They're all part of that conjugal relationship, even though their relationship is in neutrality. But although their relationship is in neutrality, they're actually serving Krishna's conjugal rasa. So in that sense, there's no higher or lower. Everyone is, in the spiritual world is, we don't consider some closer, that's sort of a material concept. But what we can say is that in one sense, if we, as a comparative understanding of the various relationships, when we take the conjugal relationship as being the topmost in this sense, it's considered the topmost in the sense that all the different characteristics of the other rasas are contained within conjugal. So within conjugal relationship is included the characteristics and the flavour of parental servitude, friendship, like that. In that sense, we can say it is comparatively higher, right? It has qualities that others don't have. But we wouldn't consider it higher in the sense that therefore those people are more closer or more important to Krishna, because all those other living entities in the spiritual world are actually increasing Krishna's conjugal love by their service in the other different
and they're extremely dear to Krishna in that sense. So, you know, therefore, in that sense, if we consider conjugal rasa to be the highest, then in the material world, it becomes the lowest. Krishna's parakeya rasa, where he enjoys with unmarried women, becomes the most abominable activity in the material world, because it is attractive. In that sense.
How do we reconcile that? You said that most of the human society at this moment are going basically down. They consider the, which is in reality going down, they consider this going up by the dimensions. How do we consider? What will happen if you look at the whole the society, what will happen? They will all become very low species as well.
Yes, well, people think, people actually, if you, you know, for instance, they've done different surveys and they've asked people, you know, if you had to reincarnate again, what would you come back as? And most people, you know, a bird, and I come back as a bird, I can fly anywhere, I come back as a horse, I can run, or, you know, like that. And amongst, you know, so many hundreds that they ask the question, practically none asked to be a human being. They considered advancement would be to take birth in the animal species, that that would be something better. It didn't even occur to them to come back as a human.
Same as my boss, he said, what's wrong with being born as a cat or a dog?
Yes,
I mentioned him as well, that's the difference you have in intelligence. He said, what's wrong with being a cat or a dog?
Yes.
That you get nourished, you get to the doctor, you know. Because they perceive it different way. Now, Sarah, if you have
that
body, you carry it to the
yeah,
bed and
yeah,
they get surgery and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, what's wrong with me? I said, but if you are a child, then you are human. Or in Italy, then you can't. So, you know, so you would not like being born there. There's nothing wrong.
In the same way, previously, if you go back thousands of years to the Vedic culture, progress was considered progress according to how you're progressing in the mode of goods. Now, in this age of Kali, progress is you know, comparatively how you're progressing either in passion and it's becoming more also that progress is measured in terms of symptoms in the mode of ignorance. So, you know, they're considering, although they're considering progress in the mode of ignorance to now be, you know, going up, further advanced, and previously they were primitive. You know, you only have to speak to people about the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, if you explain to them the qualities of the mode of goodness, control the senses and the mind, they feel that that is a backward step. And that, you know, when the senses are basically, you know, very powerful and just dragging you here and there, you know, in the mind, that that is, you know, a good thing, that is an advantage, that's actually a step. And also you see more and more that people are developing this understanding that if you're angry, frustrated, that if you just, you know, vent that anger, you know, without any restraints, that you're somehow more advanced than someone who tries to control that anger. So,
yeah, yeah. Is that the, can be considered as the progress of the Kali Yuga, so at the end it will be the material world will be destroyed because of that thing?
Yes. So now with progress is in terms of rajas and tamas. Previously it was in terms of sattva. So although we're going down, people feel that they're going up.
Prabhu, one thing I found interesting, like Krishna says everything comes from me.
Yes.
All, even the negative emotions like anger, fear, fearlessness, everything comes from me.
Yes.
I was thinking in our discussion, envy has never been mentioned. Anger is mentioned, hatred is mentioned, envy has not been mentioned.
What?
So, envy.
In the spiritual world?
Yes, when they say that everything comes from Krishna, it says envy is one of the primary reasons, greed, envy, that is there in the material world.
There's
so when
envy.
You say everything is coming from Krishna...
There's envy in the spiritual world, it's not the envy that we know of.
No, I do hear of like Satya Mama being envious of Rukmini Devi.
Yeah.
Those sort of envies we have heard many pastimes.
Yeah.
But in Bhagavad Gita, in no place has envy been mentioned. When Krishna is explaining, everything comes from me, like even in chapter 7 or 8, if you go through that, as carefully looking at each and every quality, Krishna mentions so many qualities, but envy has not been mentioned.
Yeah, generally, because envy is such a very low and abominable quality in the material world, Krishna doesn't encourage it. Generally we say that, you know, you'll sometimes hear statements that, you know, everything in the material world exists, in the spiritual world except for envy. You can hear statements like that. Because it's something that's not to be encouraged. But actually there is, in some of the confidential parts of the descriptions of the spiritual world, there is envy. But that envy is actually non-different from love. See, in the spiritual world everything is absolute. Envy and love are the same thing. And they're just different flavours of love. The envy would be in this sense that, the queens of Dwarka will be envious of the gopis of Vrindavan, and they will be thinking that they are so qualified, I wish I had those qualities, I wish I could serve Krishna and develop that intense love as much as they can derive that intense love with Krishna. So therefore they glorify the gopis. So that envy takes the form of glorification, love, respect. It's not a hatred. They don't, they don't feel malice towards the gopis. It increases their love towards the gopis, their respect for them, their appreciation, like that. So it's different. It doesn't have, the envy doesn't have the material aspects that we know. But it's there. In its pure spiritual form. Alright, here
we go for the
toilet. Oh. What is it? Any further questions just before we finish up?
When you say that you go down from Raja and then you're at the bottom of the ladder, like on the lowest planetary system, and is it by the very fact that because you're at the lowest planetary system then you're always suffering, is that how the purification happens and you gradually start to come to bigger levels and upper levels, or how do you go?
What happens is that we suffer and that forms impressions within our hearts, and those impressions become the roots that therefore when we're in the middle planetary systems they will inspire us to be more pious, because we have this sort of fear of doing something wrong, which has been pressed upon us down here, and that gives us an opportunity to perform activities. It gives us a conscience to perform good activities. Does that answer that?
And then from there you can again fall down or go up, right? It depends.
If, yeah, from there, that then this is where you develop karma in the earthly planetary system. You don't develop karma up here, you don't develop karma down there. You live out the karma here, but you don't gain any more. You live out karma down here, but you don't gain any more. It's only here you actually develop karma.
How come we don't live out in religious, I'm living on the path credit of charity and penances, and then it finishes, then again we fall back into middle system? Yeah, once from here or here, once your karma means you live there for a certain duration of life in that way, once that's finished you go back here, and when you go back here
you have certain impressions within your heart from your existence here, and those impressions dictate how you act according to, you know, you perform food activities first by those impressions. So they literally impel further activity.
So is the only place where one is delivered to this journey? Only that plant is.
No, you can be delivered from anywhere.
Even,
yeah.
Where is he doing that devotion service? One only is getting reduced.
What's that?
From the English channel, the sufferings are getting reduced, and then he will come up. From the heavenly channels, all the points credits are being decreased and he is coming down to earth.
Yeah.
So where is he doing karma, akarma? So that he can deliver.
Yeah, that is here, detachment. One has to learn detachment and surrender to Krishna, and the detachment, we cut down that tree. By detachment, that is the axe, and that destroys that tree.
The Krishna service can be done at every level of planetary system, putting planetary system.
Yeah.
Devotion service can be done in English
channel. What were you saying? You read
some? I read that it was only on Brahma Loka at the end of
and,
the material cosmos and on Earth that you can go back on. But I mean, Yamaraj is like.
Do we have to go through this? From Sama to Rajana to Sattva to be able to then make detachment, to cut the. You see? Or can we go from any directly be detached? Because we have, if I understood from 14th chapter, we have to gradually develop the. To come to the mode of goodness, then go above detached or something.
Yes.
If, does that mean also to. On this tree?
Generally, yeah. From the middle planetary system, one takes up the process of Kama Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Sangha Yoga, and through those processes one can attain various higher levels within the material world. But if one takes to Bhakti Yoga, then, you know, instead of trying to elevate oneself gradually to the planets of the higher stages in the mode of goodness and what have you, one can take the Bhakti Yoga, and within a very short time, even in this body, you know. So in other words, one doesn't have to take birth on the planet of the great sages by performing Jnana Yoga or what have you, or taking sannyas, in order to then, you know, and gradually get the Brahma Loka and then go back to the spiritual world. That is the step-by-step process. You know, you perform these different activities. And by association with devotees, if there are devotees, you know, when there are, such as Narada Muni, what have you, in the upper planetary systems, you can
you can take advantage of association with the devotee anywhere. There are many travels all over, and there are other devotees like that who travel all over. But generally people in the upper planetary systems don't take advantage of, you know, association with devotees and what have you. They're enjoying so much that although the opportunity is there, it's not that the opportunity is there, not there, but they don't take it. Here they're suffering so much they can't do anything about it. That's why the earthly planetary system is considered very good, fertile ground, because people are not suffering too much, they're not enjoying too much, but you know, they get the association devotees, they hear good instruction, they take it, they go back to the spiritual world. But you can actually do that from any place, but people generally don't. And also, you don't have to gradually elevate up the Brahma Loka in order to become, you know, gradually situated in the highest mode of goodness and then go back to the spiritual world. You can do that here in the middle planetary system as a human being. And what, you know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said to his disciples, that every single one of you can actually go back to Godhead in this life. In this life, you don't have to go to Brahma Loka to go back to Godhead. And Prabhupada said a similar thing to his disciples. You don't have to, you know, get to this point of Sattaguna existence to go back to Godhead. You can achieve that in this body and go back in this lifetime. So, Krishna is saying, that's why, he's not saying to get out of this tree, follow the arrows to Brahma Loka, you know, jump over the water and desire like that. He says, detachment and surrender to Krishna, which can be done from anywhere on that tree. That's the problem, but you know, anywhere that one takes up that process of detachment and surrender, one can cut down that entire tree.
I think there is an example that Maharaj Lali was pushed down into hellish planets, but he still continued his Bhakti Yoga, and he, after that, he was liberated.
Yes.
So that means he can actually get liberated from the hellish planets if
you're engaging Bhakti Yoga. That's right. Yeah. And yeah, that's a good point. And because Vamana Dev, he also stays down there sometimes, and Prahlad Maharaj is actually stays down there, and he's always preaching to different people who take advantage of Prahlad Maharaj's association, and Vamana Dev.
So Prahlad Maharaj was in the hell for some
time? He stays over there sometimes, yeah, he goes and visits Bali because that's his grandson. There's not hell for Prahlad. There's not hell for him, there's hell for others. You know, in the same way that... someone is in a jail, you know, in a cell, it's hell for them, but for the people who work there in canteen, you know, for them. You know, it's just their work. Any other questions? Alright, so, we didn't finish the last couple of verses, but we'll do that next time. Unless you've got some sort of an idea of that. We can probably leave that there and just continue on next time.
What are we doing next time? We're doing text. Haven't got it here. Do you know what we do next time? Yeah, verses. I mean, 8 to 11.
5 to 11.
5 to 11 next time, okay. Alright. Okay, so we'll pretty much cover it. Alright then.